And as I think about John the Baptist, the first thing that we see is that he had an encounter with God. So, you know, the title of this, the series is Close Encounters with God. And we're going to look at people who had encounters with God, with Jesus, and that after their encounter, they walked away, and their life was touched, their life was changed. And so John the Baptist had an encounter with God. We're going to look at this a little bit later in the message, but when John the Baptist, and you know, the interesting thing, and I didn't really realize this until I was studying it, is that several times John, it says that John didn't know Jesus. It says that he didn't know Jesus. Now, they were cousins, right?
Greetings, radio friends. This is Dr. William R. Glaze, founder of the Pittsburgh Institute of Biblical Studies and pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. We would like to thank you for joining us as we go through this series in the Gospel of John, Close Encounters with God. Every person we see in the Gospel of John that Jesus encountered, that their lives were changed. You can't have a encounter with God and your life not be changed. So thank you for joining us for the first half of the message today. John the Baptist is not about me.
We're continuing this morning in our series in the book of John. And we're in chapter 1, and we've been looking at this whole idea that Jesus is God, and how that John took the first 14 verses of his book to introduce Jesus as God. And then we see that after that great introduction, everybody that Jesus came in contact with in the book of John, and actually during his lifetime, actually was having personal encounters with God. And so we're continuing on with that whole idea of this close encounters with God. As we look at the sermon today, there are some things that you should leave here knowing, that when you leave today after the sermon, you ought to know what the Jews wanted as we look at this passage. You should know what the Jews thought, or who the Jews thought that John was. You should know what did John say about who he was. You should know what does the phrase make straight the way of the Lord mean. You should know what did John say he was not worthy to do. And you should also know what is the difference between a self-centered life and a Christ-centered life. So you should know those things when we leave here today. And if you don't know them, you know, again, you have the notes there, and I'm basically writing a commentary. And so I might not get to explore everything that's in the verses, but what you have there explains the verses. And the notes are put on the website every week, and so there's a lot more. I can only get so much on those sheets. So you know, you can get the full version of the notes on the website. So these are some things that you should know. We talked about the author. We said that it was the Apostle John, and the author is not identified in the book. So we have to look to other sources to identify the author. But probably the main source that lets us know that John was the author is in John chapter 21, verses 20 through 24. It is said to be written by the disciple who Jesus loved. And we know that that was the Apostle John. When we look at the purpose for the writing of John, a lot of books in the Bible, when you read them, you have to kind of filter through the book to find out the purpose. But you don't have to filter through the book of John, because John tells you exactly why he wrote the book. And it says, and many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. Now look at this. He makes it very clear. But these things are written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you might have eternal life. We looked at the overview of the gospel. And so we want to keep in mind, now I'm doing this, you know, the first couple weeks. Now eventually I'm going to move away from this as we get deeper into the book. But, you know, we said that in the Gospel of John is broken into two parts, all right? There's the first part, which involves 12 chapters. So that would be the first part. And in the first part, we looked at the prologue last week where it said that Jesus was God. Today we're going to look at John the Baptist. And then for 11 chapters, he ministers to the masses. Keep in mind that the first part of the Gospel of John covers 3 years. His audience was public. The place was northern Israel. And the main thing that he did in the first part of the book was miracles. You know, he healed the impotent man, healed the blind man, turned the water into wine. So he did a lot of miracles in the first part. And the interesting thing that I find that the second part, chapters 13 through 21, actually only cover a few days. Only a few days. So the first part of the gospel covers 3 years, and the last part only a few days. Basically, it was a private ministry, and mainly to his disciples. And then he moves from northern Israel to Jerusalem, and the message, the ministry primarily is messages. So he moves from miracles to messages. If you go to that next slide. And we listed the overview of the Gospels, and you know, we said that in each Gospel, Christ is presented a certain way. In Matthew, he's presented as king. In Mark, he's presented as servant. In Luke, he's presented as man. And then in the Gospel of John, he's presented as God. And so John presents Jesus as God. So as we move into the message today, the title of the message is, "It's Not About Me." It's not about me. And, you know, when you think about the society that we live in, it's very narcissistic. You just think about commercials, right? And we've all heard this. You know, have it your way. You know, we do it all for you. And if you look at a lot of commercials, you know, what is it aimed at? It's aimed at making you dissatisfied about something so that what? You will go out and purchase the product. And so we live in a very narcissistic society. And when you look at the idea of what is narcissism, it's basically admiration of self. Admiration of self. And when we look at the biblical definition, we go to 2 Timothy chapter 3, where Paul says this, "But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves." Lovers of themselves. And the thing that we're going to see about John the Baptist today is that he realized that it wasn't about him. And so, you know, you may be involved in ministry and you think it's about you. You think that the ministry rises and sets on your presence, right? You think that this can't go on unless I'm a part of it. Well, as I heard somebody say, it's not about you, boo. So, you know, we need to, you know, realize that it's not about us. And hopefully as we look at the message today, that we will be able to see that it's not about me. And as I think about John the Baptist, the first thing that we see is that he had an encounter with God. So, you know, the title of this, the series is Close Encounters with God. And we're going to look at people who had encounters with God, with Jesus, and that after their encounter, they walked away and their life was touched, their life was changed. And so John the Baptist had an encounter with God. We're going to look at this a little bit later in the message, but when John the Baptist, and you know, the interesting thing, and I didn't really realize this until I was studying it, is that several times John, it says that John didn't know Jesus. It says that he didn't know Jesus. Now, They were cousins, right? And so when I looked at that, I said, well, what does that mean that he didn't know Jesus? But upon further investigation, what it means is that he didn't recognize that Jesus was the Messiah until he baptized him. And when John baptized Jesus, the Bible says that the Spirit of God came down upon Jesus, and that a voice came from heaven and said, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." And at that moment, John the Baptist had an encounter with God. And as he had this encounter with God, later on he would go on to say that it's not about me. He must increase, but I must decrease. Is that the testimony of your life? That Christ must increase and that you must decrease. Well, the first thing that we're going to see is that John focuses on the preeminence of Christ. He focuses on the preeminence of Christ. And we see that in verse 15. It says here, "John bare witness of him and cried, saying, This was he of whom I spake. He that cometh after me is preferred before me, for he was before me." Now, it seems like John is doing some double talking there, right? But basically, what John is saying is that Christ came after him. Well, how did Christ come after him? Well, John was 6 months older than Jesus. And so John the Baptist was actually born before Jesus. So in that regard, John came after Jesus. But then John flips the script and John says, "But he was before me." How can that be? How can he come after you and yet be before you? Oh, you got it, right? You got it. That takes us all the way back to John 1:1. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." Jesus is God, and he's always been around. And so John said, "He's before me." And notice what else John says. John says that he was even preferred before me, that when he came to earth, that he had a greater following, and that he also had a greater mission. And so John recognized the preeminence of Jesus Christ. Have you recognized the preeminence of Christ? Is Christ preeminent in your life? What does it mean when we say Christ is preeminent? Well, somebody said, "What does a lollipop and a Christian have in common?" I said, "Well, I'm not sure about that." Well, what's in the middle is the most important. And is Christ in the middle of your life? Is Christ preeminent in your life? I remember listening to Evie Hill, and he was preaching on one occasion, and he preached that Sunday morning, and then that afternoon they had Jesse Jackson speaking at the church. And he was saying how that when he introduced Jesse, that everybody stood up and started clapping for Jesse. And that Evie Hill said, "No, everybody sit down." He told everybody, "Y'all sit down." He said, "We're not going to have more praise up in here for Jesse than we do Jesus." Right? Christ is the preeminent one. Pastor Glaze is not the preeminent one. Jesse Jackson is not the preeminent one. The great evangelist is not the preeminent one. But Christ is the preeminent one. And notice that in his preeminence, this is a blessing. In his preeminence, that we see he brings his grace and his truth in his preeminence. Look at verses 16 and 17. Verses 16 and 17 in chapter 1 of the Gospel of John. It says, "And of his fullness we have all received, grace for grace. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ." Why is he preeminent? He is preeminent because he brings grace. John said, "We have all touched his fullness." You know what his fullness is? We have all been beneficiaries of his blessing. And he says, we have grace for grace. And it's interesting where it says grace for grace. That word for is the Greek word anti, which means instead of or against. And so what John is saying is he said that God outdoes himself in giving grace. That God gives us grace, and then he says, that's not enough. Let me give them some more. They got grace already, but let me give them some more grace. Have you ever had a need? Have you ever been down and out? Have you ever didn't have a dime? You didn't know how you were going to make it? And God gave you some grace. And then he looked at that, and he poured grace on top of that. He gave you over and abundant what you need. That's why he's the preeminent one. He's preeminent because he gives grace above grace. He gives truth. And Moses gave us the law. And the law could only take us so far. The law could only point to salvation. But Jesus Christ, when he came, he brought salvation. Why is he the preeminent one? Because he gives grace and truth. Why is he the preeminent one? He is preeminent because he is the one that presents the Father. He is the one that presents the Father. Look at verse 18. Verse 18 said, no man has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. So when it says that nobody has seen God, and so I've said this before, you're going to be disappointed when you get to heaven because you're not going to see God. You're not going. I mean, we say, well, man, I can't wait to heaven, get to heaven because I want to see God. You're not going to see God because God is a spirit. The essence of God is a spirit, and you can't see a spirit. A spirit is invisible. You say, well, what about the Old Testament when people saw God in the Old Testament? That was what was called a theophany. And that was an appearance, that God actually took on an appearance. You know, for instance, Isaiah, it says, in the year that Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. Well, what was Isaiah saying? Did he literally see God in his essence? No, he saw a manifestation of God. And so we can't see God. But notice what it says here. No man has seen God, but Jesus has done what? Jesus has, and let me back up for a second, because the King James says here, no man has seen God at any time, the only begotten Son. Now, those of you who have the New American Standard, you know that says the only begotten what? All right, say it again. The only begotten God. The only begotten God, that nobody has seen him except who? The only begotten God. So this knocks out that Jehovah Witness presentation that Jesus was a God. It says that nobody has seen him except the only begotten God. And I like what it says here. And he hath declared him. He hath declared him. This word declared, very interesting word. The word declare is what I did before I came to present this message. The word declare comes from the Greek word, which we get the English word exegesis. Now, you know what exegesis is, right? Exegesis is when the man of God, when the pastor goes into his library, right? And he gets all of his resources. You know, I've studied, you know, in preparing for this message, you know, all kind of Greek resources, theological resources, commentaries, word studies. I did all that, and I pulled out the information. Now watch this, because I'm going somewhere. I pulled out the information. I exegeted the information. Everything that I could get out of the passages, I exegeted it, and now I'm standing up and doing what? I'm sharing it with you. That's exegesis. It says that Jesus Christ exegeted the Father. That everything that we needed to know, Jesus extracted from the Father. He exegeted it from the Father. He came. He presented it to us. And that's why it said, Jesus said to Philip, when you have seen me, you have seen the Father. Somebody said, what is God like? What is God like? If you want to know what God is like, just look at Jesus. Study the Gospels if you want to know what God is like. And you see the heart of God. You see the mercy of God. You see the grace of God. You see the love of God. You see the work of God. If you want to know what God is like, read the Gospels and read about Jesus Christ. It tells you all about God. John said, it's not about me. It's not about me. It's about Jesus. He's the preeminent one. I had a lady one Sunday years ago, after I was preaching, I was standing in the back, and she walked by me, and she said, you know, I really like your preaching. She said, I just only got one problem. And I said, what's that? She said, you say too much about Jesus. Man, if you take Jesus out of it, let's just shut it down. Well, let's be a club, right? That has a nice summer camp for the community kids to come and just have a good time and leave, right? Jesus is the preeminent one. Jesus is the preeminent one here. Is he preeminent in your life? And John wanted to make it clear that Jesus was the preeminent one. As a matter of fact, I'm so serious about this thing about Jesus being the preeminent one that I actually wrote a song. He's the preeminent one. And the song goes like this. He's my first, my last, and my everything. He's the answer to all my dreams. He's my sun, my moon, my guiding star. He's some kind of wonderful. That's what he are. I know there's only one like you. There's no way that they could have made two. You're all I'm living for. Your love I'll keep forevermore. You're the first. You're the last. You're my everything. You are the preeminent one. You are the preeminent one. In you I found so many things, a love so new only you can bring. Can't you see it's you? You're the one that makes me feel this way. You're like a fresh morning dew on a brand new day. Man, somebody stole my song. How you know my song? How you know my song? Jesus is the preeminent one. And that's what John said. It's not about me. It killed people. God, this is my ministry. No, it's not your ministry. This is God's ministry. You know, as we even talk about building this new building, if it's about Bethany Baptist Church, we might as well just stop. We might as well just stop. If Jesus is not going to be the preeminent one when we go into that building.
Thank you for joining us today on the Anchored in Jesus radio program. Tune in next time for the conclusion of John the Baptist, It Is Not About Me. If you would like to request an audio copy of today's message, John the Baptist, It's Not About Me, you can contact us at anchoredinjesus.org and request John the Baptist, It's Not About Me. That's anchoredinjesus.org and request John the Baptist, It's Not About Me. Or you can call us at 877-831-5060. When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can also view the many resources that we have there. Teachings, sermons, books, pamphlets, all those things are available at the website, anchoredinjesus.org. We would also like for you to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit us at our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to anchoredinjesus at P.O. Box 2434, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206. It is through your prayers and gifts that we remain on the air, and we are humbly grateful. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews 6:19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and anchor for the soul. This is Dr. William R. Glaze, and on behalf of our volunteer staff, I'm reminding you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.